Welcome to Morph Into a New You, part of MHNRnetwork.com. Your host, Johnny Calloway, is the author of several books, including Taming the Dragon, Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge. He will be having conversations with people from all walks of life. Healing really is an inside job that transforms you to become a better version of you. We must change our self-talk and inner dialogue so we can start to believe. A special thanks to our sponsor, Meaningful Expressions, at m-expressions.com. They can take a concept, thought, or personal brand and turn it into a visual masterpiece that you can use to raise awareness about your passion or cause. They've certainly done that with our podcast website. And thank you for joining Johnny as you morph into a new you.
Hello, everybody. We have Aaron Huey with us today, director and founder of Fire Mountain Programs. Today, we're going to talk with Aaron a little bit about his program, and we're going to talk mainly about suicide prevention and intervention. So with that, I'm going to turn you over to Aaron.
Johnny, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I admire you and your work a lot. Dragons to Butterflies is right here on my bookshelf in front of me. Folks, my name is Aaron Huey. I am the founder and owner of Fire Mountain Residential Treatment Center. We are a program for teenagers ages 12 to 17. We're in Estes Park, Colorado. We work with kids who are struggling with drugs and alcohol and self-harm and suicidality, depression, anxiety, and mild to moderate behavioral disorders. So we are a dual diagnosis, a multi-intervention center. And happy to say that we got a great group of kids right now. They're all working really hard. They don't love every day, but they are sticking with it and doing the work.
And kids live with us for a minimum of 4 months. And they have rooms here right now. And I'm really happy to say they're all outside playing in the 2+ feet of snow that we've had over the past 2 days. And I went out and built a fire and like a beacon. Like I went out, me and one of the staff member who he's an awesome staff member, and he was formerly a resident in our program. He and I went out and built a fire, and we were talking about the hero's journey. He's our English teacher now. I mean, this is a kid who came to us at 15 years old in the old facility. He's now one of our teachers in our high school and teaches English and the hero's journey and the archetypal language. And all this he learned from me and my wife. And he took it on at such a level that now he's one of our staff members. The kids absolutely love him. So he and I go out and we dig out the fire pit and we make a fire. And next thing you know, all the kids are looking out the window. And next thing you know, they're all putting on their snow clothes and snow pants. And next thing you know, they're all standing out there. We say, hey, under that snow pile, there's a giant pile of wood. Every single kid's over there pulling wood out of the snow pile. Now what they're doing, as I look out now, is that in one of the drifts that has been made by all the snow sliding off of the roof, it's made a gigantic pile. It's a big facility with a metal roof. So the snow slides have made a gigantic pile and they're digging a cave. They're starting to dig a snow shelter. So today's archetypal hero's journey lesson is about the cave of the innermost self. And the kids are learning how to enter into that cave where the dragon lives, because by golly, Johnny, you know, in that cave where the dragon lives, that's where all your gold is hidden. And it's all the way in the back. You got to go to the darkest place in your cave to find the treasure, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
Here's what I love about this. Here's why I'm so passionate about this. There is a microcosm and a macrocosm of this work that is taking place. It starts with lighting a fire. And it ends with everybody participating, digging snow shelters, making a winter kitchen and benches and a table. Tonight, they're going to be roasting hot dogs and roasting marshmallows. And instead of doing the 12 steps inside, we're doing them outside on a cold night in front of a fire. Instead of doing English sitting at a desk, listen to a teacher drone on and on, we're going to do it outside, sitting in desks made out of snow. For the experience, right? To wake them up, to get woke. That's what the kids like to say now, to get woke.
Get woke.
get woke. And they're waking up. These are kids, some of them, Alabama, Texas, they've never been in snow before. And they're out there like a winter wonderland. These are kids who did not have the types of childhoods where being sent outside to play in the snow and be cold and be uncomfortable. This generation does not know how to be uncomfortable. And what I'm passionate about is I am passionate about providing the conflict and the concept and the obstacles that the kids have to, within all of that, within going through their 12 steps, within having to do English, within doing martial arts, they find self-concept. Who am I in the snow? Who am I inside? And the reason why I'm so passionate about this is because it took me a long time to figure out who I was. And people say, oh, Aaron, you had low self-esteem. I didn't have any self-esteem, but it's not because I felt bad about myself. It's because I didn't know who I was. How do you have self-esteem if you don't have self-concept? So Fire Mountain is about developing self-concept so that you can have self-esteem.
It's
a way of saying, who are you, kid? Because right now everybody's treating you like the bad kid who's doing the drugs, or the crazy kid who's cutting, or the depressed kid, or the anxious kid who can't leave his room. But who are you underneath that? If that's just the result, man, let's get to what's deep and underneath. And that's what this is about, is the resolution of my own journey of being a lost child. And I had a great family. Don't get me wrong. My mom did an amazing job. And the man who raised me was not my father, but man, he was a great daddy. He still is to this day. But I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I was supposed to be. And I didn't know how to be with others without being the center of attention. And when they didn't want me to be the center of attention, then I disappeared into drugs. And then I became drugs, and I became alcohol and the deadbeat dad and all that stuff. So there's a chance for us to get into this war on drugs. And yep, I said the word. It's a war, and we lost. And kids are living in the fallout of this nuclear bomb blast that is false coping mechanism of drugs and alcohol and monster drinks and anxiety and depression and video games and internet and porn and food and all these things that we do to compensate for feeling like crap. So I want to get these kids out there and let them feel like crap for a minute and say, while you're here feeling like crap, man, I love you and you're still awesome. And as soon as you believe me, as soon as you believe all of our staff, as soon as you realize that all of us are right and you're actually wrong about yourself, you're going to woke. And once you're woke, it's awesome. Life's awesome when you're woke.
So I have the one question. You mentioned a couple times 12 steps and doing the 12 steps outside. And for your kids that aren't quote unquote some kind of addict or have some kind of addictive behavior or cutting, what is your approach with them with the 12 steps? And I have so many questions for you, but you're talking about facing that darkness. How do you do that with them? And I know there's several questions mixed into one there, but I know you're quick enough to handle that. So,
so first of all, our 12 steps are not your traditional 12 steps that an adult would do. And it's for two reasons. Number one, for the very reason that you talked about, that not everybody's struggling with drugs and alcohol. And number two, I do not believe, as a person who practiced and got sober using the traditional NA and AA 12 steps, I do not believe that those 12 steps are appropriate for children. And it's a personal belief. People can disagree with me, but I believe that those 12 steps are based on a developed ego system. And I believe that one of the reasons why teenagers struggle so much is because their ego is in development. And it's under a crisis development because they're trying to fit into a society that is not the family society that they were brought up in, where their egos were pretty safe. Or they have way overdeveloped egos because they had an unsafe childhood. So myself and two other 12-steppers who work with me, one is a counselor over at an adult program here next to Estes Park. She was an intern with us. And the other is named Carla Burchell, who this woman, my wife and I love this woman. She is the Fire Mountain cheerleader. She is such a fantastic support of our program. We go whitewater rafting together and hang out with her and her husband, Steve. They're just really good friends. And Carla is a 12-stepper. And we do this, myself and Carla and Gretchen rewrote the 12 steps for teenagers.
Oh, cool.
It doesn't mention God, and it does not mention drugs or alcohol or any one form of addiction. And here's why. To me and to Fire Mountain, our philosophy is based on Addiction is not about some substance that you've become addicted to. It's about, I keep doing things to mess up my life and I can't stop. Okay. And there's going to be very rare that you get a teenager to admit they're powerless, but they will admit that they keep doing things to mess up their life and they can't stop. Now, when we go about, you know, in the second step where we start to talk about turning things over to a higher power and God, that's where teens will start to shut it down. And so to be more of a universal, and for someone to say, well, I'm not addicted to drug, our step two says, I need help to do something different. I can't do this alone anymore. And number three is I learn how to ask for help. And number four is I fearlessly make a list of everything in my life and everything I've done that I love and hate. Number five is I courageously share this list with someone I trust. So step four and five are very much like traditional steps. Number six is I agree that what I've been doing is self-destructive and I'm ready to change. So by the time we get to six, that's when we're asking kids to actually embrace the idea that changing is a possibility. So number seven says, with the help of others, I work every day to create the life I deserve. Number eight says, I make a list of the people I've hurt and I get ready to do what's right. And number nine is, I do what's right. Number 10 is, every day I pay attention to what's happening in my life and I take responsibility for myself. Number 11, life is better when I stay connected to things that help me be my true self. And number 12, I share these steps with other teens who are struggling. So you can see in there that if someone's cutting, this fits. If someone is looking at too much porn on the internet, if they're gambling, if they've got food issues, if they're using heroin, if they're arguing with their parents all day long because they have reactive attachment disorder and they're dealing with abandonment and attachment issues, these 12 steps will work with them. And we call them the Fire Mountain 12 Steps to Sanity. So only about 40 to 60% of my kids currently actually struggle with drugs. I've got kids who are struggling with attachment and anxiety and depression and cutting. And I got a kid who is really struggling with heroin. And so to me, the struggle is second to the person, right? The story is not what's important to me. The storyteller is. So I'm going to look past the story. I've been doing drugs. Yeah, well, so have a lot of people. What's going on under that? Right. Why have you been doing drugs?
You have no idea how much I agree with that. When I approach the 12 steps with someone new to either one of the programs or just wanting to change their life, my addiction is an addiction to self-destruction. Because every addiction I've ever had, its goal was to take me down. So I love your whole concept there. That's what I'm saying. I love it. I couldn't agree more with it. I think it's incredible.
You know, Johnny, I was telling you, we were talking about dragons so much, and I know you and I will have many, many conversations around dragons and the dragon archetype. And I was telling you about Jose Stevens, Dr. Jose Stevens' book, Transforming Your Dragons. He calls it the self-destruction dragon. It's the fear of losing control. People with this dragon are addictive, violent, and suicidal. They exhibit wild behaviors or desperate self-sabotage. They may not live long because they cannot find meaning to life. And as children, they were abused and abandoned. Does that sound familiar?
It sounds like the Reader's Digest version of my life.
Yeah. So I just wanted to bring that up as you were talking about self-destruction. That is literally one of the names of one of the dragons that is swooping down into your village and stealing your worth, your wealth, your nurturing and your sustenance, your princess, your innocence. It's the parasitic external that we bring in and internalize that literally takes up residence in our home and our existence. That's why the logo of our company is a dragon breathing fire in the shape of a mountain. It's the Fire Mountain. It's the self that's created through confronting the dragon.
Just to interject something here, just like you were saying about going into the cave and seeing the dragon, and one of the things I've written is you must face the dragon to become the butterfly. I can't find the beauty of me as long as I'm hiding it behind the dragon. As long as I'm listening to the lies of the dragon, I can't find that part of me that shows light, that is love. And yeah, we are on the same page. I knew the first time we spoke that we had a lot of things in common and our approach was much the same.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. Your concept of the butterfly and stuff, I find it remarkable that not a couple of weeks before you and I met that I had, in Costa Rica, that I had gone into a butterfly pavilion, a nature conservatory that focused on butterflies and snakes, and have pictures of butterflies landing on my head and stuff like that. And I love that, the transformative aspect of the butterfly stuff. So I think it's very fortuitous that we're talking, especially at this point in our lives.
Right. And I have another question for you. I actually have a few, but one that I really want to bring out. When we were talking in Littleton, Colorado, at Lifted from the Rut, one of the things you said that really brought me out is the answer is always love.
Yeah.
And elaborate on that. Tell me more about that and how you do that at Fire Mountain.
Well, first of all, my sobriety, my darkest, deepest moments, my rock bottom. Jim Morrison once said, I've been down so goddamn long, it all looks up from here. And when I was in that space, it was love. It was unconditional love that saved my life, that saved my self-concept, that taught me in a moment, that taught me what kind of man to become, how to reverse engineer my identity so that I could be saved. That's the right word. And there's an old book about recovery it's probably in its fifth or sixth edition right now, but it's called Beyond the Yellow Brick Road. And this book, the man who wrote it was the man who created, really, I think, at least his claims about it are around creating the first rehab for children, for youth in the United States. His name is Bob Meehan. And the foreword is by Tim Conway, because one of Bob Meehan's first clients was Carol Burnett's daughter. And they call him the father of drug intervention. And then people love or hate this book. But what I tell you about this book is that he relates a story where every day he was meeting with this priest around lunchtime. And one day the priest called him. And this was in the middle of his addiction as well. And one day the priest called him and said, hey, I won't be able to make our meeting tomorrow. He left a message. Hey, I won't be able to make our meeting tomorrow. I apologize, and I just want you to know I love you. And the guy, Bob, was like, what? Is he gay? Like, have I passed on the wrong message? Like, what is going on here? Like, love. And I didn't know we were having meetings. Like, we were just hanging out during lunch. And, you know, he automatically went into a defensive posture because someone had gotten to him with the words, I love you. And the more he sat with it, the more he realized that in that moment, that priest had not judged him for being an addict, and that he was spending time with him, enough time that he was saying, I'm sorry, I'm not going to make it. I look forward to our time together because I love you. And then through that, Bob was experiencing God's love and all that type of stuff. And the story, as I was beginning to build Fire Mountain, really cemented in me my own personal experience of feeling love in my darkest day, divine love, a love from a complete stranger who never knew my name and they were on the phone, and my dad, my daddy, who, when I told him I was an addict, you know, and all the years of me stealing and lying and being a shitty older brother to his biological children and treating his wife, my mother, like crap, and just really being a burden on the family. When I told him I was an addict, the first thing he did was offer whatever it took because he loved me. And that saved me. That was that, because that was everything I ever wanted my biological father to do. And he never did. And it's not lost on me that my relationship to the All Father, the male figure of divinity, is that one day I die and it's a noble death. And when I cross the rainbow bridge into Valhalla, that Odin is there saying to me, I'm proud of you, son. That's not lost on me that every day I live life trying to make this masculine aspect of deity proud, because that's all I ever wanted from my father. And what was really, really important to me was that everybody was offering it to me, But in my addictive mind, I couldn't feel it. I couldn't see it. I couldn't express it. I could not experience love. I had a daughter who was the light of my life. I had a wife who I was enamored with and treasured. And I traded custody of my daughter. I traded my relationship. I traded a small cabin on 70 acres. I traded the respect, all for drugs. And it was all because I could not feel the love of my father. And so, to quote an old Pantera song, what I can say and feel now as a successful parent to not only my daughter, who I traded custody and then traded it back. I traded custody and drugs. And when I realized that it was a crappy trade, I traded back up for custody. And then I got a son. I became a stepfather to a young man who I'm unbelievably proud of and love immensely. My current wife and I are co-workers and best friends and soulmates and all that gooey crap that I'm not going to get into. And what I have to offer these kids is based on a line from Pantera that I heard in my deep, dark drug days, where Phil Anselmo sang, "You'll never be the father I am, the bastard father to the thousands of the ugly and criticized and unwanted, the ones with fathers just like you." And that was a song to his dad, who was an alcoholic and an abusive man. And that's how I live my life, is I want to be a bastard father to 1,000 lost children, only so that they can find themselves and become good daddies and good mommies and good in their community. And if I only get one, so be it. But so far, I'm doing pretty well. So I'm gonna stick with it. And good so job. How do we not love? How do we look at this and not love this insanity, the insanity that is addiction, the insanity that is wreaked and the havoc that has placed on families who are suffering from a family member who's dealing with addiction? How do we not do it with love? Well, that's it. It's got to be love.
Okay, so I love all of that. I'm really on board with all of that. But I want to, so the audience knows more about Fire Mountain, I want you to tell us where you're going from here. I would love to, regardless of what you're going to say to that answer, I'm going to tell you what I would like to hear you say, and that is, I want to have these in other places. I want to have Fire Mountain someplace where there's no mountains. I want to have it in the flatlands of Florida. I want it to be throughout the country. So tell the audience where you're going with Fire Mountain.
Well, it's a powerful question, and it's a powerful question because it has a lot to do with, you know, what we're going to do with our business with the next 15 years. And right now, what I can say, and I'm being honest about business here. I'm being honest about taking this idea of loving children and loving the families that are struggling and putting it into play with very real life people, employees, an HR department, a kitchen and professional chefs, clinical director, state licensing that changes based on where you go. And in learning how to run a business, what I understand now is that the foundation pieces of how to train someone to run one of these places, because certainly my wife and I can't run every single. So learning how to hire the people that looks at our programming and looks at our documentation and looks at our systems and says, yeah, this is what I wanted to do. I just didn't know how, and you guys know how. So let me take it from here. My dad always said, if you want to be successful in business, surround yourself by people who are smarter than you. And to me, that means surround yourself with people who can do this work better than you. I have no formal training other than having run this and done interventions because they needed to be done and been the person in the kitchen or on the lawnmower or intervening on a family crisis or, you know, trying to keep a kid from running away from the facility or talking some family member out of suicide. So I learned this on the go. And what I'm trying to learn how to do is to hire someone who can do this better than me.
It's funny. My business partner is constantly quoting his dad with this one saying, and that is, you can always hire brains. And yeah. That's what I have to do with what I'm doing. I have to find the people that know how to do what I don't know how to do and let go of the idea that I'm supposed to know how to do it all.
So another way of saying that is that if you're the smartest person in the room, man, you're in the wrong room. Like, because it doesn't stimulate your growth. It doesn't stimulate your experience. But how do you hire someone who's not like you? Because if you can only reference reality from your own perspective, how do you say, oh, that person will be better at this? Because the like is attracted to the like. So naturally, the vibration of Fire Mountain is going to attract people like me. And I don't want people like me. I want people better than me. I want people. So here's where I'm going with this, Johnny, is that our number one goal of our vision is to be the best in the world, to have the highest results in the field of recovery, and to leave a legacy of superior techniques for other people to use. That's pompous as hell, but damned if I don't make that happen. That is my goal. If that ends up in a second facility, so be it. If that ends up in a TV show called Teen Rescue 911, so be it. If it ends up that I do this and then some big corporation says, hey, we're going to take this and copy it, and to make that happen, I step out of the way so that the founder is not in the way of its progress, because that's certainly a reality. Yep. So right now, what I can tell you is that my wife and I are building the plan for the next 15 years. And it's not clear. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with this yet. What I can tell you is we're good. We do a good job with these kids. These kids feel safe and they feel loved and supported while they are struggling with their problems that we have handed back. We're not fixing their problems for them. They're saying, I got a problem. We're going, yeah, what are you going to do about it? And I love you. And what do you need? Well, I don't know. All right. Well, do you want to hear some ideas? No, I'm going to try to figure this out. Okay. I love you. And then say, yeah, okay, I need some help. Okay. Here's what other people have tried that we've seen work. You learn how to be an ally to a child.
That's a good segue into the next question that I have for you. And that is, one of the things you spoke of when I first met you is what you do with the parents of these children. And I think that's incredibly important for the listener to hear as far as Fire Mountain. And I know I kind of cut you off there, but I want the people to get the best picture of what you're doing. And to me, that parent part is incredible. So can you take a minute and tell us what you do with the parents?
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up, because in fact, today I was in meeting with the clinical director and we have decided to add an entire another component to the parenting program. So first of all, to every and all parents who ever get their hands on this and listen, I want you to listen very carefully to this moment. Your child is not broken. I don't care how bad it is. Your child is not broken. They are not making bad choices. If your child is using drugs and cutting themselves and being suicidal, these are not choices. This is a child in crisis. And this is what people in crisis do. This is what adults in crisis do. And children are not broken. Systems are broken. Children are product of systems. And this is hard for parents to hear. I understand that. I'm a parent. I have two kids who are both in college right now. And I have the pleasure of looking at some of their bad habits and taking responsibility for that and telling them, hey, that thing that you're doing when you're spending your money like that, I want you to know that I taught you how to do that. And you don't have to do that. You can do better. You can do better than I did. You have permission to leave me in the dust evolutionary wise. You have permission to be better than me. I want you to be. Don't be another me. One's enough. You go be another you. You make your own decisions about money because you're doing the same old crap I used to do, daughter. That's system behavior. Problems like addiction are systemic. Problems like abandonment are systemic. And so the parent must find themselves in a conscious enough, in an egoless enough space to say, I got to change. If I want my kid to change, then I have to change. What I can say to a parent is everything you have done has achieved this result. You are a creature of habits. And if you want to know what your habits are, look around at your life, because your life is the sum total of your conditioned behavior. That's what every parent who walks in says, my kid's life is a mess because they keep doing A, B, and C. And I want to look at the parent and say, yours too. It's right. Just your kid's doing the exact same thing as you, man, because they've been living under your value system for 14 years. Well, they're not doing it now. You're right. They're not doing it now because remember when you were 15, 16 and you rejected your parents' value system and then you developed your own and realized that it didn't work and you should adopt some of your parents' systems? Well, that's what your kids are doing. So parents have to do their work. If a kid is going to change, then when the kid comes home from changing and the house looks the same, if the house feels the same, if the conversations are the same, the kid will go back to the way things were because the way things were the only way the kid could survive the system dynamic that they were living in. That is just the truth. And it's not, parents can argue with it. I've had parents, trust me, I work with the parents. I've had parents argue with me. And I can look at them and say, tell me one lecture that your parents ever gave you that you learned from. One. Now, tell me all the things your parents did that show you how to be. See, we don't learn from lectures. We do not learn from the oratory. We learn from modeling. We learn from our parents by what our parents do, period. Not what they say. It doesn't matter what you say. It matters what you do. It matters how you say it.
So, Aaron, typically when a child comes to your to Fire Mountain, and I know I'm just looking for a general answer here, how long are they with you?
They're with us for a minimum of 4 months. We are developing a 3-month program. Johnny, let me speak to our expectations of the parents in the program because the parents are responsible not only to come for weekly therapy or to do weekly therapy online through Skype. They're also required to come to our parent weekend. There's a phone call with the kid once a week. The parent has an online parent portal where they can watch their kid's weekly process and progress. The parents come to a monthly bear tribunal, which is the kid's treatment plan review. And in phase three, the parent is involved sometimes on a daily basis. We are also now instituting an all-parent coaching call twice a month, where the parents are required to be on a call with myself, the clinical director, one of our therapists, one of our mental health workers who has a really good connection to make to the parents about working with the kids so that the parents are in a constant state of learning and offering the tools over and over and over. The kids are in 11 hours of therapy a week. The parents need to do their part and work that level of intervention as well, where they are intervening on their family system, their parenting techniques, their behaviors as much as the kid is doing. Our assumption is that parents will be more disciplined in practicing the new behaviors. I find that sometimes to be true.
Well, my reason for asking the time frame is really kind of ties into what you were just saying, because you got a kid that's lived in a system for 15 years. Or 16, however old they are when they come to you. You can't turn that around without help from the parent changing the system in 4 months.
Johnny, I disagree and I agree. So I'm going to say you're both right and wrong about being able to make a change in a 4-month time period. So let me explain myself. Number one, there are two types of changes. There's state changes and trait changes. Now, a state change is what my mental health workers do, and they might do 50 of them on one kid in a day, okay? A state change is when you're like, oh, I just feel locked up. So you go for a walk. Your back hurts, so you stand up and stretch. You're listening to something that pisses you off, and you go, blah, 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 and you feel better. And those are tiny little changes that get the body working a different direction. It's called a state change. If I was to say, Johnny, stand up right now and give me 5 jumping jacks, and you did, I'd be like, how you feeling? Oh, my heart's beating a little faster. I'm breathing a little bit harder. I feel good. That was good. That's a state change. So if a kid's like, man, Mike just had a really shitty family session, and my mom is saying this, and she keeps bringing up the past, and I'm trying to move forward, and my mom's this. And as an adult, you know that the mom is still really afraid that the kid's going to come home and wreak havoc again. So her fear of the past is valid. And you go, hey, hang on a second. So I'm hearing you say this and this and this, and I'm wondering what else is really going on. Well, my roommate situation here is not working out too good, and I got to have a conversation with that. Wow, man, it sounds like a lot of things are going on right now, not just the mom thing. Yeah, I probably could have done a little better. It's just I've had a really hard day. Hey, you want to go outside and talk about this? Yeah, let's do. State change. That's a state change. That's a state change conversation. What you're talking about when you're talking about making big changes or trait change conversations. And what I know is that a therapist or a good coach can pull off one sincere trait change in about 4 months. right? If you go to therapy because you were abused as a child or you've been assaulted and you're having nightmares, it takes about 4 months of consistent therapy to create a trait change where the nightmares stop, or that the reaction to the fear-based behavioral reaction to men, because you were attacked by a man once, begins to shift. That's a trait change. So we send kids home with the ability, and we send families back to their kids with the abilities to invoke state changes themselves so that they can maintain the work that actually creates a trait change. You and I both know that, and this is why 28-day programs don't work for adolescents. There's a 2% success rate for 28-day programs for adolescents. That's the national average, 2%. And that's because it's not long enough to really embed any new conditioning. And you can only condition state changes. Trait changes have to, those are deep changes. Those are deep psychological neuropathway changes. So what people started doing said, well, kids need to be in boarding school for 12 months. Well, that actually causes attachment issues. So you can't do that. So 4 to 6 months is about the right amount of time to truly give a child and a family the work that they need to do for the rest of the time. Failure comes from people not being able to do the work. I can tell you, we teach, my therapists teach, my mental health workers teach the same things to every kid and family that comes through here. Some kids succeed, some families succeed, some kids fail, some families fail. The ones that fail are the ones who stop doing the work and go back to the old patterns. The ones that succeed make a change. And even if the kid comes home and they go back to the old behaviors, if the family maintains a forward trajectory on the new work, they will find deeper happiness and satisfaction with who they are, themselves as a parent, and be able to deal with the kid from a much different place of being than the old reactionary conditioned behavior, automatic response that they used to do before they came to Fire Mountain. So we call it seeds in the desert. And when a kid comes into Fire Mountain, a family comes into Fire Mountain, we're going to plant, we're going to throw as many seeds into the dinner. We're going to Johnny Appleseed this family. And you're just going to pray for rain. That's it. You're just going to pray for one moment where when the family is locked up in some old pattern, someone steps up and evolves. We'd like it to be the parents. That's it. But I will tell you right now, I got a kid who's about to graduate, and her mom and dad have just stepped into their oldest pattern. And this kid is panicking. This kid does not want to go home now. So the kid's not doing her work. She doesn't want to leave. She's safe at Fire Mountain. Now, she's safe at home. Neither of these parents are abusive or mean. They're just, they've both lawyered up, and they're going to go back to an age-old argument. Wow. And someone's got to evolve. And right now it looks like the kid did.
Yeah. Aaron, right now I'm going to have to, first off, I want to say I could talk with you the rest of the afternoon. Unfortunately, we don't have that kind of time. So I want to ask you to sum up for us what you're about with Fire Mountain concisely. And then I want you to give our listeners all the information you can as the different ways they can find out about Fire Mountain, about Aaron Uhy, and what you're doing.
Great. Fire Mountain is currently the most successful treatment center in the United States for adolescents. We have the best recovery numbers that we can find. And we look because our goal is to be the best. Our program is a 4-month minimum. We work with insurance and private pay. To get your kid with us, the first thing you need to do is go to our website, www.firemountainprograms.com, and read. And if you like what you read, then you contact our admissions director. You can fill out the online paperwork. You can submit it and get a phone call from our admissions persons, or you can call our admissions person yourself. And that's Jill Lampshire at extension 204. The phone number is 303-443-3343. You're going to talk to Jill, extension 204. And we'll see if this is working out. And if it does, then I will meet with your family and your child, and we interview every single kid. We are a unique program. We are not a lockdown. We do not have isolation rooms. We are a non-restraint facility. If your child needs those types of things, then you would be looking in the wrong place if you were looking at us. Our diet is very, very healthy. We are a big exercise program. We are a high school as well. So your kid does get high school credit. Even if they're too young for high school, they will get high school credit through us. And they do a lot of therapy. We have high expectations of parents. We're big into art, really into art. So if this is sounding good to you, then go to the website, firemountainprograms.com. You can find me on YouTube, Aaron Huey. You can always put in Aaron Huey Fire Mountain and I'll show up. I am not the photographer named Aaron Huey. He is a phenomenal photographer, but I am not him. You can also find me on Facebook at Fire Mountain Residential Treatment Center and Aaron-Huey, or my regular page, Aaron Huey. I'm on Twitter as well. So you can find me on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook, but start on the internet, go to our webpage, check it out. If it feels right, follow your gut. If it doesn't, don't.
Aaron, I want to thank you for being with us today. I've really enjoyed this myself, and I'm sure the listeners have gotten a lot from it. And thank you so much for being here with us. And I want to thank all the listeners for being here with us. And Aaron, I also want to say I hope we can revisit this conversation in 4 to 6 weeks and continue to build this thing with you.
I'm absolutely in. You and I owe each other a conversation about dragons.
Okay. All right, buddy. Thank you, and thanks to all our listeners.
Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Remember, never give up, always keep it real, and take time to smell the roses. And please, sit down and watch a butterfly. Keep up with all that we are doing by going to morphintoanewyou.com. Thank you very much.